The election has been called.
The election has been called.
Things are about to kick off. Aaron O'Toole.
To the journalists in the room.
Justin Trudeau.
This pandemic.
After months of speculation.
The federal election.
Now is not the time for an election.
Buckle up and get ready to ride the pandemic election roller coaster.
So Jesse.
Hi.
This is
you keep forgetting to introduce.
This is election coverage. This is a follow-up to the last episode because I had loads of research I did, but Jesse ranted for 30 minutes.
I did. I was very excited.
So we're going to come back and cover some of the notes.
Caffeine is my friend.
Also, I wanted to follow up. I was thinking about what you said about how pointless it is voting.
I mean, through my experience, yeah. Like, it seems like politicians are going to do whatever the fuck they want anyway, as long as they get in.
So I was trying to crystallize my own rant, okay, and my own thoughts.
Yeah,
on
please.
This. So I've come up with a term for it. I call it the progression engine, which makes it sound way more smarter than it actually is.
Okay.
So, you know, popular revolution.
I mean, it kind of sounds like the progressive conservatives.
No, it's just called the progression engine.
Okay.
The reason they put progressive conservatives, which is actually
I'd like to have been called the aggressive conservatives. I think that'd be a lot funnier.
Yeah. Which in his name, the progressive conservatives makes me laugh because they want to progress and they want to conserve. So they're pulling each other apart. They're going to snap in the middle. Anyway, so popular revolutions are like a crash diet. You think
Say that again?
Popular revolutions. So say the government, like they go and they burn all the tanks and they overthrow the government, and then some new leader, like a general or some kind of protest leader, becomes the new president. Immediate, massive social change.
Okay.
But within a few generations of those revolutions, people in power get cozy and the system goes back to where it was, where there's a lot of self-interest. You look at a lot of popular revolutions where...
I don't look at a lot of popular revolutions.
This is going to be a utopia. We're going to change everything. And then you get a generation later, and those people who were young, dashing kind of leaders of revolution are now middle-aged and old and out of touch with the youth. And it's just the thing that happens where, you know, you have that big crash diet and you get lots of people being overthrown. And it's kind of like... The way it is, it's kind of like a crash diet where... you make sudden people who go on crash diet. Someone who's crash dieted multiple times. You go on a crash diet.
You've crash dieted
once or twice.
What is a crash diet?
Where suddenly you just go, right, I'm changing everything right now.
Oh,
and
okay.
Then you always crash back because it's unsustainable. You go, I'm not going to be anything for 3 weeks. I'm just going to drink water and I'm just going to lick an apple for 3 weeks.
So
that's like
I have an example that happened to me exactly like that, but like kind of exactly like that. I feel like I have a little more willpower. Like 2 months ago, I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm too unhealthy. This has been a shit winter. And I'm like, I know everything that I need to do.
Yeah.
I just need to pull the trigger. So I'm like, all right, fuck it. I'm doing it all. And I stopped drinking. I quit sugar. I started intermittent fasting and I went on the ketogenic diet. All at once. And in 2 months, I lost 23 pounds, but I felt great. And then my friend had a small get together and she was like, Jesse, there's going to be pizza and there's going to be brownies and there's going to be cheesecake and there's going to be lemon tarts and there's going to be cookies. And I showed up and I just went nuts. I ate everything. And then the next day I sat down and got a jumbo box of Lucky Charms and poured it into a mixing bowl and just ate that after eating a cheeseburger, Domino pizza. And it was the greatest fucking weekend. And then I'm like, you know what? That's it. I'm done. And I'm back on the keto diet now. And I feel like, okay, you know what? If I can do that every 2 months.
You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of extreme sudden change can shock the system and can make a lot of people uncomfortable. The idea of a big revolution where everything changes, mm-hmm. government is swept out, they restructure how government is made. You know, that can cause a lot of the backlash of that in people's lives can be quite dramatic. It can cause, you know, in some cases you have revolutions and agriculture is reformed and it caused mass starvation because they make big decisions about how they're going to reform society. And it can be messy sometimes.
Sure.
But whereas kind of democracy, like we live in, is much more like if you're dieting, but you gradually change things in your life in a way that is changing your behavior and your habit over time, so it becomes much more sustainable. So you go, right, I'm gonna walk every day, and I'm gonna try and walk every day.
Oh, slow growth is the way to success.
Exactly. So that's long term. So I kind of like think that Whereas revolutions are sometimes warranted, like overthrowing a horrible dictator or something.
Sure.
In our society, you imagine if somebody overthrew the whole system of government in Canada, it would cause a lot of chaos for years.
Yes.
Without a doubt. Maybe Canada would break apart into different smaller countries.
Right.
People would see it as, like, maybe Quebec would see it as an opportunity to go, well, we don't know about this. We're just going to do our own thing. Thank you very much. You know, maybe the West would do the same thing. So whereas with democracy, what you have is this constant, if people are engaged with, and this is not me saying the system is perfect. This is me saying that if the democratic model we've got, people are engaged, they're listening to the issues.
Are they though?
The reason people need to vote is that what you have is a constant turnover of moving forward. You look at how society has moved forward over the last 100 years, 1,000 years in terms of moving towards equality and kind of acceptance and participation in everything. So if people participate and they vote in good candidates, over time you have this long gradual change where the old way of doing things is gradually eroded by new ideas and new people. And you have to participate and you have to have good candidates and you have to hold bad candidates. You have to hold their feet over the fire every election and you have to drive that. And what you'll have is that gradual change and move forward. Society will keep moving forward. It won't be that immediate fix everything thing, but over time you will grind your way forward.
Yeah.
But everyone has to participate.
Yeah.
Everyone. And you have to field good candidates and Trump promoters so that you have people who give a shit. And when those candidates inevitably get bogged down by self-interest, which will happen, you think, when you're 20, you're idealistic, by the time you get to 60 and you've maybe been around power or in power, you're going to be a very different person. As long as you're able to kick those people out and replace them with new people or make them feel like they have to work for their jobs.
Reese, the problem with this ideology is that it will never fucking happen. Okay?
But it does happen sometimes in history. There are there are moments in democracies where...
And not only that, but just to interject, hypothetically, let's say that does happen. And what you're saying is you're getting everyone involved in the voting process, not just voting, but getting involved in politics. And you're getting ideological candidates who are coming in who are bright-eyed, bushy-tailed and want to make a difference. If the system that is currently in place doesn't change, then everyone will revert to how the system is broken. And the system is geared towards corruption. It's geared towards an old way of doing things that doesn't fucking work anymore. Okay. And it's just like, if the system doesn't change, then these new people can come in. But if the system doesn't change, then they'll just get sucked into the system itself.
But there's one thing that can happen, that everyone turns out to vote. Because at the moment, there's a sizable chunk of people, more people don't vote than who vote for the person who wins.
Of course, yeah.
So the one way to hack the system is to use it as it's supposed to be used.
But it's broken.
The reason it's broken is because people aren't participating. If everyone...
No, that's not why it's broken.
If everyone turned out, they would instantly... Think about it. There is a party, hypothetically, that could exist that nobody votes for.
Is it bipartisan voting where everyone's vote counts instead of every county's vote counts? Like, what is the name? Is that what it's called?
It's just how they count the votes. So it's not first past the post. It's basically they tally up second choices and third choices so that you go, I definitely want that person. If he can't win, then maybe this one. Or if she can't win, then that one.
So that's, yes, it's like, it's where if 20% of the population of Canada voted for a specific person to be prime minister, then that 20% counts as 20%, not, you know what I mean? Like, is that...
Yeah, it's not winner takes all.
Right. So that was going to be implemented if Justin Trudeau had gotten elected, is what he promised.
He was going
to implement that. And then he got elected, and you know what he didn't do? That. He did not do that. Why? Because he doesn't want that. It's not... because he realized that if he got that, he would be bumped out the next election.
But the only way to make that happen is for everyone to turn out and to vote for a party that will do it because they'll benefit from it.
Okay, so we have nothing in place in our current system that will... If a party promises something and they don't at least attempt their promises, there's nothing other than we might not get elected that holds their feet to the fire right now. Nothing. It's all promises, and we just hope they do it. That's it. No consequences to them not doing.
It doesn't have to be like that. If people were more choicey with their votes, if they were like, no, I don't want
to. It doesn't matter. There's nothing in place saying that, like, there's no consequences to a party not doing what they say they're going to do. Nothing. There's nothing. Like, we just hope they will. We just hope they will do what they say they're going to do.
They just get kicked out.
Yeah, but the next party does the same thing. The next party does whatever the fuck they want. But, and so on and so on. And so they just get replaced by more people promising false promises.
Do you know why?
Do you know whatever the fuck they want to do? And if they don't do what their promises, they get kicked out. And the next party comes in with their false promises and they do whatever the fuck they want to do. This has been happening for fucking decades.
But they get away with it because people choose not to participate with the system. They get away with it because people are like, there's no point in voting. What difference does it make?
So what
they feed off that because they're like, well, okay, I can literally do anything I want.
Tell me what would happen if 100% of Canada voted for parties that still did whatever the fuck they wanted once they got in and didn't do anything they promised. How would that change
anything? What you'd have, though, is a huge... The people who do vote are quite tribal or tend... You know, there's a lot of the parties have a mass of people who will always vote for them. And then there's a bunch of swing voters or people who don't vote, but you want them to come out to vote specifically for you, which happens. So in the US, it's not usually a swing to the left or the right. It's who turns up to vote that day.
Okay, yeah.
So you look at the system from the point of view of if 100% of people voted, then that's a hell of a lot of swing voters. You're talking maybe 40% of the vote being swing voters who've never voted for another party before.
Okay.
So if you have swing voters who are up for grabs by anyone, that will terrify the people who are doing it. And if you know that
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about once they get in.
But once they get in, if you know
they can do whatever the fuck they want.
But those swing voters then
with no consequence.
But those swing voters then can punish you at the next election.
Yeah.
So if they are, so you can have governments.
But again, they can punish you at the next election. But like this happens. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
No, but
you've got a point. You've got a point.
That's because the thing is that if you have engaged that a lot of the reason that governments get away without doing
so you're saying
the reason they get away with it is because people aren't participating and they know they can rely on a certain they can know as long as 35% of the population 35 to 40% of the population turn out for me or 35 to 40% of the population of the voting age people who are relevant turn out. But that's how it works.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Okay. No, that's interesting.
So don't forget, though, that's 35 to 40% of probably about 60% of the people who can vote. So society is being guided by a very small group of people who choose to vote.
So if they know that they're going to... Right, yeah.
So it's not representative.
I feel kind of bad. Because this is a comedy show and we've been like, I've just... It's supposed to be a comedy show.
I haven't even got so much... But anyway, that's my idea I came up with. The progression engine is that
we should put a disclaimer at the beginning.
I know, no comedy in this.
No comedy in this episode. Just.
But the idea is you just constantly grind forward through these elections. And it's going to look messy and gradual. Yeah. But it's never... It's the alternative is sudden dramatic change.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, that's... I mean, that's interesting. All right. Yeah,
I just wanted to put.
You've got a point. You actually make a point. Math.
Yeah, but that's it. Right?
If we get more people involved in the voting process, that means we'll get more swing voters, which means that the politicians who do get voted in will not feel as secure in their positions as the current ones do.
Exactly.
Chris Locke.
I'm James Hartnett.
And I'm Michael Belazzo.
And we're the hosts of comedy podcast Evil Men.
It's a podcast where comedians, us, joke around about different bad guys, rude dudes, and sometimes murderers.
Yeah, we might talk about a horrible person like Jeffrey Dahmer.
A depraved maniac from ancient Rome like Caligula.
Or even sometimes a mean cartoon character like Gargamel. Because the things he did to the Smurfs were just awful.
Yeah, we talk about all these things, but most of the time we're joking, you understand?
Or comedians. We're foolish by nature.
Catch us on the Sonar Network and download us wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Everardo Ramirez. I'm a comedian.
I know.
And I want to tell you about my new podcast.
I know.
It's called Public Access Podcast. It's a limited comedy anthology series out now on the Sonar Network. Each episode is a completely new show from a fictional public access channel. It's a limited series with only 10 episodes, so you don't have to worry about this thing downloading on your phone every week for the rest of your life. Plus, it has some of my funniest friends on it, like Mark Little, Nick Nemiroff, Meg McKay, Mikey Kohlberg, and some others. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts, okay? You know how to find it. I don't even have to tell you. If you're listening to this right now, then you know how to find a podcast. Just look for Public Access Podcast.
So what you've got to do is people complain. The reason they don't listen is because they don't feel like they have to. So as if you make them scared of their own job and genuinely feel like they have to work to make their job continue, they will. They're like anybody else.
I can't believe you changed my mind on this. That's actually...
Thank you very much.
Wow. No, that's...
I thought about that while I was in the shower.
No, that's good.
I can't believe...
I like that you think about me while you're in the shower, Reese.
I think about you not voting while I'm in the shower.
Yeah, whatever does it for you, man.
So, yeah. What were we talking about?
I don't know.
Well, that was it. I had some of the I had some facts about elections, but this is more fun. Yeah.
Well, do you want to call this episode? We started this episode because I ranted too much in the last episode, and you wanted to talk about what you had planned for the last episode. In this episode, I ended up just ranting again for 25-30 minutes.
I counter-ranted, and
you did.
Yeah, and, yeah. And we had a breakthrough moment.
We did have a breakthrough moment. So, do you want to end this episode and then talk about what you had planned to talk about in the next episode?
Yeah, I think this is fine. It was just.
Let's do it.
Prince Edward Island tends to have the highest turnout rates in the country in both provincial and federal elections.
Let's do the next episode. So we'll give it more content. We'll just do it.
I can probably just shoehorn in this at the end. The lowest just turnout of any province.
It's going to be a long episode.
Alberta's got the lowest turnout.
Alberta?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Even lower than Nunavut.
That's surprising. What?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, no, sorry. Turnout is even lower in Nunavut. 39%.
Often lower in Nunavut than BC.
So think about
none of it's really tiny, man.
Like, yeah, but think like...
Population-wise.
Okay, well, take Alberta. So 52% of people turned out to vote in 2011.
52%?
52% of people.
That's pretty fucking good.
That's really low.
I thought it was like 35 in Canada.
Prince Edward Island, 74% of people turn out.
That's really good.
So you think about it. If you won by 50%, if you won 40% of the vote... That's 40% of 52% of people who could vote.
Yeah, it's still not a lot of people. Yeah,
compared to all the kids who can't vote. Mm-hmm. You realize that only a tiny percentage of the population gets to just make all the decisions for everybody else.
It's such a weird catch-22, whereas the current system is broken. And I think me and a lot of people can agree on this, that it is, it needs...
You can agree with yourself?
You can agree with me, yeah. I agree with myself, thank
I
you.
I can agree with me on this.
Yeah.
And do you know who else agrees? Me.
The system is broken, which is why a lot of people aren't voting. Because, like, why do I want to be involved in a system that is clearly broken?
I don't think it's broken. It's just not... People don't use it.
It's not...
People aren't using it the way it's supposed to be used.
Yeah, well, and this is where the catch-22 is the way you're talking about it, which I now agree with, is... In order to fix the broken system, they have to be involved in the system. They have to.
Yeah.
So which is really like, why should I vote in a system that is broken and clearly not working or benefiting very many people at all? But if I do vote and everyone I fucking know votes, that will allow us to then fix the system that I don't want to be involved in because it's currently broken.
And when inevitably those people you vote in who you want to change things become. Bogged down by self-interest, because this is inevitable. You get power. People come to you within a few years. You'd have to be very, very few people would be able to avoid that and stay the course on their beliefs and make those decisions. So then that's the great thing about democracy is you just change them, and you get you constantly have this new drive of people coming in. That's the whole point, is that there's no permanence. You don't have to be satisfied with the leadership you've got. You've got the ability to change and stand for yourself or help select and support the people you do want to.
Yeah.
Just people just have gotten the mindset. Here's the change. They don't have that choice.
Here's the change that I'm going to put out into the ether right now. Jugmeet Singh, we love you. You're doing a great job.
He's in Halifax right now.
Quit with the attack ads, man. Just knock it off, okay? Fucking stop with the attack. Like, seriously, it's childish. Don't do it anymore. You can stand on your own 2 feet with what you believe in. That's great. knock off the attack ads, man. Nobody wants them. That's it. There's not going to change. That's my change. Attack ads are so stupid, man. They're so fucking dumb. Vote for me because you shouldn't vote for him. It's so stupid. It is childish.
And it doesn't work. We've covered this. It's like going to...
Yeah, we've covered this before. Yeah.
I'm going to go buy a Toyota, and you go to the Toyota dealership, and all the Toyota dealer talks about is how shit Nissans are.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but what about this car? No.
It's not a Nissan.
Look at that. Look how crap. Look at that. Look at the color choice. Oh, they're rubbish. Who would want to drive in a car that color? But what about this? No. You don't want me to tell you about this car. What you want me to do is tell you about the car you shouldn't buy.
Right,
yeah. It is backwards. And that's the thing is that, you know, a lot of... The problem is that a lot of people within political parties work their way up. The thing I hate about a lot of political parties is there are people who have never worked in the real world or experienced the real world outside of... obviously, they live and they're a neighbor and everything else, but in terms of their work, and they've never been outside of politics. And I think right. that's not a good...
No, it's not.
In the UK, there's this huge political class, and like you know, they it's a bubble essentially, where a lot of what they worry about and what their priorities are so different from everybody else, and I think that people sometimes become so removed from reality and what people care about and why they care about it that they then rely on things like focus groups and statistics and you know they. And then you get these attack ads because they're like, "Oh, we need to point this out," and you get people who don't have a grand vision for how many people have said to you about a grand vision for society?
Not many.
Yeah, you know, like so after World War II, like you had.
This is an intensely long episode.
This is after World War II. People wanted to build a society fit for heroes, which is where the NHS, they were like, you know, we've all fought in this war, you're all heroes. We need to build a society that is fit for everyone who's, you know, we've been through all this hardship. Let's come together and build something great. And the NHS, you know, the National Health Service was created in 1945 and was an upshot.
I don't know much about this.
So people that suddenly had healthcare, you know, free at the universal healthcare, free at the point of delivery as an upshot of the hardship of World War II. They came together with this big vision. And then the government also built like a million homes and all this kind of thing.
Wow.
And you just think, you know, a government that can have a comparable vision where they go, these are the big problems. These are our big ideas to fix them. I think people want that. I think a lot of the time people are too scared of if they say one thing too strongly, they'll offend another group of people.
Of course.
But what they forget is there's a bunch of people who don't vote, who if you came up with this amazing idea that terrified 30% of people for their own self-interest, but 70% of people agreed because they go, yeah, we need this.
You know, those people who are terrified of it would be very vocal about it and would it would gain opposition.
But 70%
which then might hear about what you have to talk about, otherwise they may not. Right? So, the 30% who hate your idea would actually be working in benefit for you because they would be advertising.
So, say for instance, I said, if you vote for me, I can't even vote because I'm a permanent resident. If you said to me, if you said to me, right, what I'm going to do is I'm going to build a whole network of electric bullet trains. To cover the whole of Canada.
That'd be so fucking cool.
So you can jump in a train in Halifax. You can be in Vancouver within 8 hours.
That'd be amazing.
Oh my God. There'll be no need for you to do long road trips. There'll be no need for...
You have so much opposition from the airline industry.
Exactly. But this will be very environmentally friendly. We can move people fast, efficiently, safely.
Oh my God, convenient. Why don't we do that? That's amazing. What a great idea.
But a lot of people would go, that's a great idea. But then you'd have, how much is that going to cost?
Of course.
You know, what's this? You're going to airline people lose jobs in the airline industry.
I love the people who are so against things because they come to a realization like, oh, this is going to cost money and we don't like things that cost money because taxes.
But also then as well.
Like whatever you're doing is free. I'm for it. But
people will snipe away at it. But you realize that if you built that in 50 years time, people would go 50 years ago, some crazy visionary decided to build this amazing network of trains and to change society because travel was affordable for all Canadians. And rather than fly into the Caribbean, they could actually visit other parts of their own country affordably. Mm. You know, you think, and it would mean that people could live and commute all across a huge country.
That would be amazing.
But now everyone gets bogged down with it. But you think if a politician said that, they would go down in history as the person who did this thing, like the highways, you know, Harry Truman.
I spoke about this before. You'd have to have these politicians that are sacrificial. Like, I'm going to go in and I'm going to do a great job. Yeah, it's probably going to mean I'm not going to be reelected. Yeah, but I'm going to go down in history as doing this.
I've got this vision. Yeah. We're going to do it.
Yeah, and I might not get reelected because of it, but I'm going to go down in history as having helped the country and doing this amazing thing.
Yeah. I'm willing to.
That's never going to happen.
I'm willing to sacrifice.
It's never going to happen because of power and corruption and money.
No. Exactly. But there are. You do have people who do those things in countries. There are places where they do achieve those things.
Yeah, but for
they don't
power
have to,
and corruption.
And not just dictatorships that go, you're going to do this and you might all die while we build it, but we're going to do it anyway. Yeah. But actual democracies do those things. Like I said, the NHS.
I feel like we could rant forever and we should end this episode at some point.
I know, but this is my counter rant to your rant. So, if you want to vote for me and I'm going to build bullet trains that go across Canada... Halifax to Vancouver in 8 hours, and it'll cost you $50 return. That's my promise.
Incredible. Yeah, let's do that.
Would you do that?
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yeah. I should
and those trains do exist, I think.
Not in Canada.
No, everywhere else. So I think, is it China?
Japan.
Japan like pioneered it, but I think in mm-hmm. China they've been building a high-speed rail network. You can get from the equivalent of LA to Chicago in 2 hours on one of their trains.
Wow.
And that's a national network they're building. If you want to win, then just be bold. Be bold or go home.
Ugh, I don't like the idea of voting because someday it might change. I just like, maybe.
Anyway, so this has been a long. But anyway, I feel
terrifyingly
like
long.
I've
got
it out my system.
Very
now.
Little comedy.
I've got it out my system now.
Okay.
All right,
call to action, eat a cookie. I don't fucking know.
I don't know. Let's think of some jokes to put in at the end.
We need a disclaimer. We should put a disclaimer.
Warning.
Warning, dear listener. Thank you for hoping to listen to this incredibly long episode. Warning, there is very few humorous joking things during the course of this particular episode, and more Jesse and Reese ranting incessantly about Canadian politics for a very, very long time. You have been warned. Thanks. And on with the show.
Yeah. I'm tired now.
Yeah, Reese is tired, and I can see him. He's getting tired. I can see it in his eyes.
He's got sleepy eyes.
Sleepy, yeah. Thanks so much for leaving. If you've made it to the end of this insane episode, we really appreciate it.
I hope you're going to vote now if you weren't going to vote.
Oh, my God. I still kind of, I'm on
we
the
We need
fence.
Swing voters to reach out to us.
I'm a swing voter because Reese made a really good point that I can't really fight logically, but emotionally, I'm like, I'm still like, ugh, I don't know. I guess I'm a swing voter now. It makes me sound so dirty.
In Spain, they have a thing called the blank vote, which is like essentially you can choose to vote for no one. You can say, I don't want to vote for A, B, or C. I want to vote for D, which is just an expression of displeasure. Mm. And often the non-vote will win over the other person still wins.
Oh, wow.
But often it'll say, hey, everyone's shit. And that number of votes will often beat other candidates.
And how much do the politicians give a shit about that? They don't.
I love it, though. I think it's great.
That is funny. Yeah.
Anyway, bye.
Bye.
The election has been called.
The election has been called.
Things are about to kick off. Aaron O'Toole.
To the journalists in the room.
Justin Trudeau.
This pandemic.
After months of speculation.
Federal election.
Now is not the time for an election.
Buckle up and get ready to ride the pandemic election roller coaster.